Newcut.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Matt Fry.
Welcome back to Washington, D.C., where the sun is slowly beginning to inch above the horizon. This is a, you know, it's a very beautiful city in the summer and the winter, rather, because you get this sort of cold light and you get pink skies in the morning and in the evening. And no building in the city is allowed to be taller than the Capitol building on Capitol Hill, the one that was stormed on the 6th of January. And so you get this extraordinary kind of neoclassical panorama with the dome rising, you know, above the city. And of course, it's all based on ancient Rome, in a sense, you know, as the Republic, not the Empire, or that's what they like to tell themselves here. The sense that, you know, this is, you know, the shining light, the beacon of democracy, etc., etc. All that has been put into question in recent weeks by Donald Trump, by the events on Capitol Hill, by the strange nature of COVID and curfew that has led to this very weird inauguration. Who better to put all this into context than my dear friend Simon Marks, LBC Washington correspondent, whose studio I'm currently sitting in. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning. I think there's lots of people better, but you're stuck with me.
No. You're the go-to guy. Okay, oh, so yes. So we've known each other for a long time.
Simon, we have.
And we won't go into the details of all that. But we have witnessed, you know, political events in this country. The good and the bad and the ugly and the not so ugly. How weird is it to be a few days from inauguration and the centre of Washington looks more like the green zone of Baghdad than the Washington that we know?
Yeah, it is even being called a green zone. I mean, it is the ultimate testament to an onslaught against America's constitutional values and democratic traditions that Donald Trump has waged from the moment he arrived in this city, proclaiming that he was here to end an era of what he defined as American carnage. And in fact, what we're witnessing now on the streets is the result of some American carnage, the insurrection that he incited, the invasion of the Capitol building. The more we learn about it, the more concerning it becomes, the more evident it is that the protesters were trying to find Mike Pence, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, in a bid to execute them. The more we heard from police testimony yesterday, the protesters expected the police to be on their side. They said to the police, "We've supported you throughout the Black Lives Matter protests. You know, let us into our house. Let's join forces to spark a revolution here." These are people who have been relentlessly lied to over the course of the last 4 years, have substantially grown in numbers. I was thinking back. I mean, if you remember, Matt, I don't know if you were here for the Oklahoma City bombing, but if you go back as far as Oklahoma City and the reaction to it, there were moments in the months thereafter when, if television networks wanted to boost their ratings for their news magazine programs, they would do an hour-long special all about, you know, the enemy within, the extremists within society. And these people who at the time weren't even able to communicate in the dark corners of the internet, because the internet wasn't operational at that point, would sort of be trooped out like exotic animals in the zoo, and there'd be these kind of town hall meetings where people who were refusing to pay income tax to the government because they didn't recognize the government's writ, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff would get their hour on television, and you'd sort of watch it and you'd think, God, I wonder how many of those there are out there.
And now they're trying to run the country.
And then they'd go back and you wouldn't see them again. Yeah. And now, suddenly, within the last 10 days, this instant realization that the country has not failed to recognize the threat that exists within. You look at the charge sheets of the people that have been arrested. These are not that all the downtrodden and the underprivileged. There are police in there, teachers in there, firefighters.
There's a woman who came on her private jet, I just read this morning, from, I think, Texas. She flew on her private plane to Washington. She's a real estate mogul.
Oh, the estate agent, yeah.
Yeah, she took part in the riots, and now she wants a pardon from Trump.
Right. And who, by the way, even last night at the White House was meeting the unhinged pillow executive, photographed outside the Oval Office, waiting to go in with notes that someone has prepared for him. He says a lawyer, urging Donald Trump once again over this final weekend in power to declare martial law and put extremists in charge of the CIA and other government institutions. Not only is he on the grounds of the White House, I mean, you can't just wander in there. He's clearly been cleared by security to enter the building, but he's gone in to the Oval Office for a meeting with Donald Trump, who after 5 minutes then delivers him into the hands of his national security advisor, Robert O'Brien, and tells O'Brien to go and take this pillow executive to see the legal counsel in the building to present his ideas to the legal counsel. What has happened here? I mean, this is... And how does this genie ever get put back into the bottle? Because that's the real question for the next four years and beyond.
There's a lot of stuff there in your answer. Let's just briefly unpack some of these things. The accusation, which sounds extraordinary, but it has been levelled and it has been investigated by the FBI, that some of the rioters sought to detain and then execute lawmakers. And then the prosecutor seemed to row back slightly from that accusation. Yes. Where do we stand on that exactly?
Well, the accusation was contained in some charge sheets that were being prepared to advance, you know, these case notes that they make as they're seeking to round all of these people up. But look, we know that there were people inside that building screaming, chanting, "Hang Pence." We know by one report that had they entered the building 60 seconds earlier, they might actually have encountered Mike Pence in one of the hallways.
And so just to interrupt, they screamed, "Hang Pence," the loyal vice president, Mike Pence, because he didn't do what they thought he would do, which is to basically overturn the election result.
Yeah, and that's why the incitement charge against Donald Trump is so difficult to refute, because Donald Trump, an hour before, had told them at the Save America rally, and they've always got these extraordinary names for these events, that Mike Pence had powers that Mike Pence did not have under the Constitution to overturn the outcome of a Democratic American presidential election, that he could block the certification of votes. So Trump tells the crowd that, then tells them to go and march on Capitol Hill. Pence, in the meantime, puts out a statement saying, "I do not have the constitutional authority to do what the president is suggesting." This after a couple of weeks during which we had learnt that on numerous occasions, Mike Pence and his chief of staff had attempted to explain to Donald Trump exactly what the Constitution allowed him to do and, more importantly, did not allow him to do. So by the time these guys get up to Capitol Hill, they are in a frenzy. They believe, as one of them says in interviews with law enforcement, "Mike Pence turned on us. He betrayed us." Well, Mike Pence didn't betray them. Mm. Mike Pence upheld his oath to the American Constitution, which is absolutely at the heart of America's governing arrangements. And that's what's so extraordinary about this. This is the moment where Donald Trump and his mob come into direct conflict with things like the oath of office that lawmakers take when they enter office to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, Mike Pence was defending the Constitution against domestic enemies who just happened to be thousands of people supporting the president that for the last 4 years, slavishly and loyally, he has served.
Do you think that Donald Trump doesn't understand the Constitution, or does he know the Constitution and he's just prepared to trample on it? I mean, is it a case of you can take the guy out of New York real estate, but you can't take New York real estate out of the guy?
Well, I would be surprised if Donald Trump has spent an enormous amount of time during his life thumbing through the Constitution and reading it and understanding why it's such an historically important document in the terms of development of democracies. I mean, he's not a detail guy. Of course, he and his supporters would argue that they are the true patriots here, that they are entirely in favour of constitutional probity. They would argue that a rigged presidential election, as President Trump falsely claims this election was, flies in the face of all of those constitutional arrangements. So I can't imagine that he thinks to himself, and they certainly don't think to themselves, that they are seeking to tear up a constitution, although interestingly, some of them spoke in terms of trying to launch a revolution. Mm. And of course, revolutions are very rarely launched in order to protect and preserve existing constitutional arrangements. Revolutions are sparked in order to establish new governing arrangements in countries. And that's what's ultimately so, I think, conflicting about this for Americans. Joni Ernst, Republican senator from Iowa, this week asked the question of these rioters and protesters, you know, are they really supporters of Donald Trump, or are they much more tied to the values of the American Constitution? She didn't know the answer to the question, but she posed it. And it's a very, very important question, because as Donald Trump now heads off to Mar-a-Lago, he thinks to establish an alternative center of power. How much sway is he going to have over these people? How much loyalty can he command? And how is he going to communicate with them, stripped of his ability to use social media now?
So just one final one. You know, he's off Twitter, he's off Facebook, and of course that in itself raises all sorts of questions about the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you genuinely predict that he's going to split the Republican Party? Or will they resist those moves?
Well, I think he has already split the Republican Party. There's no common ground whatsoever between men like Mitch McConnell on Capitol Hill, the leader of the Senate, majority leader, the Republican leader in the Senate, and Congresswomen like Lauren Boebert, this gun-toting Coloradan who has shown up and who is refusing to go through metal detectors in the House of Representatives because she insists she's going to wear her Glock wherever she goes all over the city. There's no common ground between those people. So there's
but Mitch McConnell enabled these other people, didn't he? I mean, he enabled the big lie.
The whole Republican Party enabled the big lie by failing to shut Donald Trump down in late 2015 when they began to see the threat that he posed, but they didn't quite know how to disarm the bomb. And actually, many of them thought this was all a passing fancy. And when you got into those primary debates, he was going to fall apart because he didn't have any control of the issues. They didn't understand that in many ways, the genius of Donald Trump was understanding that America was ready for its electoral politics to be turned into a reality TV show. The absence of Twitter and Facebook, obviously a huge problem. The existence of propaganda TV channels here now, like One America News, which of course is not news, give him massive opportunity because they will hand over their airtime to him at the drop of a hat. And that's how he's going to continue, I think, being a very vivid presence here throughout the Biden presidency.
OK, in 10 seconds, because we're running out of time, Simon, what are you going to look forward to on Wednesday, Inauguration Day?
I'm looking forward to the Biden speech. I think it's going to be very interesting to hear Joe Biden's speech and precisely how he couches this. He is facing the challenge of a lifetime. Never mind COVID, never mind the vaccine disaster, never mind the economic crisis that exists here. Does Joe Biden recognize the threat that is posed to America by a situation in which he is taking the oath of office behind a physical ring of steel with more troops on the streets here than in Iraq and Afghanistan combined? And what is he going to do beyond simply saying, I want to be a president for everyone in this United States? Because that's not going to work.
Okay. All right, Simon Marks, you've taken more than 10 seconds, but it's you. So you're allowed to. Thank you very much indeed. And the question to you is, the question to you, dear listener, is this. What are you looking forward to from this new presidency? Or perhaps you're going to miss Donald Trump. Perhaps. Call me. 0345-6060973. Coming up, Mick Mulvaney, Trump's former chief of staff and former foreign secretary, David Miliband. But for now, I'm Matt Fry. This is LBC. The time is 12:17.